the fourth dimension. What could be more eerie and wonderful and mysterious than the fourth dimension? It's a terrific idea to think about. But what I think about most when I think about the fourth dimension is an aspect of what mathematics can offer to the public and to society beyond mathematics, which is, how do you create new ideas? So in this lecture, what we're going to be talking about is how do we create the idea of the fourth dimension, something that we can't necessarily see directly, but something that we can develop the concept of by starting with what we know and then expanding through metaphor and through extension from what we know to beyond what we can see. So this will be our adventure of exploring the fourth dimension. So let's begin by starting with the familiar world, the world in which we're most familiar, which is things like this room. When we look at this room, it appears to us to be three-dimensional. We have 3 degrees of freedom. We can go forward or backward, side to side, up or down. If we wanted to locate a point in this room, we could start at some origin point and say it's so far 2 feet this way and 3 feet this way and 4 feet up to locate the position of a mosquito as it moves around the room. So we think of this room intuitively as three-dimensional. Of course, our physics friends will tell us that that's an illusion, but we can ignore them. Okay, so it looks like three-dimensional room, and we'll go with it. So when we're trying to figure out an idea like the fourth dimension, one thing that we need to do is to transcend the familiar and to move to the unfamiliar domain of the fourth dimension. How can we possibly do that? Well, one of the strategies that is so potent for mathematicians and has been so potent over the years in developing mathematical ideas is to concentrate on those things that we know well and put them together in order to extend our vision to things beyond what we know. So let's start by thinking about the familiar three-dimensional world and even going down to a simpler, maybe less familiar, but yet a simpler domain, namely a two-dimensional world. So we're looking at just two-dimensional Euclidean space, which is going to be what? The plane, right? Flat plane, two-dimensional space. But we can go down even further than that. So what would be lower than a two-dimensional plane? So I should ask some of our students here. What's a line? You can't think of a straight line. A straight line is the next lower kind of thing. Can you think of even lower? A point. The individual point, just one point, would be zero-dimensional space. If you lived in zero-dimensional space, you'd be home by now. You'd never miss a party. You know, it's really zero-dimensional space. Okay, so what's the relationship between all of these familiar dimensions that we can start with, and what we're going to do is just take ourselves forward. So if we start with a single point, and we just line up a bunch of points next to each other, we sweep them along, we get a straight line, one-dimensional space. If we think about how we create two-dimensional space, well, we just take a straight line, and we put copies of that straight line, one for every real number, and we put them together to create the plane, two-dimensional space. And then if we take two-dimensional space, and we put a copy of two-dimensional space, one for every real line, for every real number, not every real line, for every real number, what do we get? We fill up this room. We get three-dimensional space. So how would we get four-dimensional space? There's a pattern going here, right? So let's just go ahead and everybody say it all at once. How are we going to get four-dimensional space? We start with three-dimensional space, and then?
Stack them up.
Stack them up. Okay, we take three-dimensional space, we stack them up. Well, you know, it seems like there's a bit of a problem here. The other space has had the possibility of taking like a two-dimensional plane, and then we took another two-dimensional plane next to it, but it didn't touch anywhere. Right? It's completely disjoint from it. It didn't touch. And then we could put one for every real number. No two of them touched each other. Whereas if we start with this entire room, and we think about putting another three-dimensional room, it looks like there's no place to put it. What direction do we move? Well, this is how we deal with this concept. We say to ourselves, well, let's not be deterred by reality. See, mathematics is the one domain where we're not constrained by reality. No, don't ever stop with reality. Instead, we just say, let it be. Let it be. So what we're going to do is just say, suppose that you could take this entire room and just make another copy of it right near it, and another copy right near it, and we could stack them up, in fact, one for every real number, and we could put them together so that points correspond exactly in the way they do, analogous to the way two-dimensional space creates three-dimensional space. If we could do that, we would create this fourth dimension. So let's just go ahead and do that. Now, what does it mean to just go ahead and do it? Well, what it means is that what we'll do is we'll always proceed by analogy. And so the mantra for the evening is the single word, retreat. Whenever I ask a question about the fourth dimension, where we have difficulty in understanding it because it's an unfamiliar domain, don't think about it. That one of the most important strategies that mathematicians use to solve hard problems is that they don't do them. They do easy problems, and then they learn from the easy problems so that they can do the harder problems later. So we're always going to retreat. We're going to retreat from whenever we have a difficult problem, like how are we going to get this fourth dimension, you know, to fit in here when it's already full. We're going to always retreat. So let's retreat, first of all, down to how we get two-dimensional space from one-dimensional space. And so we saw that two-dimensional space, let's see. There we go. We said that two-dimensional space was created by just taking a bunch of lines and putting them next to each other. Now, I've just drawn five lines here instead of infinitely many. Now, partly it was a matter of time. But partly it was a matter of trying to set a precedence because I knew I couldn't draw a whole bunch of, you know, infinitely many planes in here. So I just picked five things. But you just imagine interpolating between these levels that I've actually drawn. There are many other levels, one for every real number. So this is the plane. Now, the microphone's on. Okay, so now how are we going to think about three-dimensional space? Well, three-dimensional space, as we saw, was just a stack of two-dimensional spaces. Now, this little cross, the axis lines for the plane, represents an entire plane. So we just imagine that we have, in this case, five copies of the plane, and we're stacking them on top of each other at level minus one, minus a half, zero, and so on. And we just imagine that there would be other levels in between, but I've only had time to draw five of those levels. So now this is a representation of three-dimensional space. It's a somewhat unfamiliar representation of a familiar domain, namely this room. Okay? And now we can easily say what is four-dimensional space, and you see that there is no difficulty in representing four-dimensional space in precisely the same way we represent a three-dimensional space. It's right there. So if we can understand how those representations of the lower dimensions worked, then we can just do the same thing in four-dimensional space, and everything is hunky-dory. So let's go ahead, and I'm going to ask you some quizzes. So here we go. The first thing is, I've drawn an object in the plane, but I've not drawn the whole object. I just drew part of it, and I've represented by dots, if you see there, how that object impinges on the various levels that I chose to draw in the plane. So I wanted to ask you to tell me, what is this object in the plane? And so we just do it on the count of three. Everybody will say, one, two, three. Okay, well, let's see. So let's think about it. It looks something like a circle or an oval or a diamond. What it is that at this level, at minus one level, there's a single point. And then when I move forward to the minus one half level, there are two points somewhat farther apart. At the zero level, there are two points further apart. At the one half level, closer together, and at the one level, together. So if I trace those out, interpolating, making my best guess of what's happening between the levels that are actually pictured, you can see that I've drawn a circle or a diamond or something of that type. Okay. Now let me do the same thing for three-dimensional space. So here we go. Here's an object in three-dimensional space, and I want you to look at it. This is four-dimensional space. That's probably too far. Well, maybe I don't have a picture of this in three-dimensional space. Okay, so here's a picture. Let's go up to a three-dimensional object, and I want you to tell me what this object is in three-dimensional space. Okay, now think about it. Yeah, think about it here. So let me just tell you what it is. There's a point at the one level, and then a circle, a bigger circle, a smaller circle, and a point at the bottom. Now, many of you think you know the answer, but you don't. You have it wrong. Because you're not thinking about the fact that I come from the University of Texas at Austin. Okay, now you're finally... Okay. So what is the answer? What is this object?
Football.
It's a football. That's right, it's a football. You see, it's a point, circle, bigger circle, smaller circle, and a point. It's a football. Very good. Okay, now what is this object here? What is this object here? This is an object in four-dimensional space. You see there's a point at the one level, two points here, two points, and a single point at the bottom. What is that object in four-dimensional space? That's wrong. Okay, so let's see. Think about it. Think about it. What is it? What is it? Now, if you have trouble, then we're going to retreat.
Exactly.
Okay? So let's say on the count of three, what is this object? One, two, three.
On another side course.
Right. It is just a circle or a diamond. It's just a thin object because there's just a single point at one level, two points, and one point. So it's a circle or a diamond. It doesn't gain dimension itself just because it's sitting in a higher dimensional domain. Okay, so here we go. Here's one more quiz for you. This is a, what is this object? This is in four-dimensional space. It consists of a point at one level, then a circle, bigger circle, small circle, and a point at the bottom. What is that object? Okay, it is a football, right? It is a sphere. It is just a surface. It doesn't have more dimensionality itself because it's just a point, a circle, and then a point at the bottom. So this is a football. Okay, so we're getting accustomed to how we see the world in different domains. Okay. Okay, I think I'll skip this one. Okay, so here we go. No, I won't skip. Okay. Does anybody have a piece of paper? Okay, if you have a piece of paper, here's what I want you to do. Look at the person next to you. And what we're going to do is imagine what it would be like to live in different dimensions. But one strategy for doing this is to look at some unfamiliar dimension, something that's different from the three dimensions we're accustomed to, that's different but easier. And then we'll talk about different but harder. Mm. So different but easier would be the plane. Yeah. So look at the person next to you and draw a picture of what that person would look like if you were living entirely in the plane. You were constrained to flatland. This is the flatland. You're just in the flatland. You can't look up. Your entire domain is the plane. What would it look like? Okay, go ahead and draw a picture. So, well, the plane, you can draw, the whole piece of paper is the plane. So you were able to draw the So let's see. Do we have a picture here? Okay. Okay. So you know the Now, many people, so I can see that there's some people are looking at something. So this is a picture that typically people will draw. But the only problem with it is that this picture has the defect that the person is very introspective. Because the only thing that person can see is the inside of their head. So if we were designed by the design of this, the location of the eyes in this person, the eyes would be inside, embedded inside our brains, and we would not be able to see at all because, you see, it would be encased by the surrounding surface. So this is the surrounding surface. Okay, so this is it. So what does the correct picture look like? Here, I should draw a correct picture so that you can see it. So this is a correct picture of a person in space. So here we go. And this is a So the eye is on the outside, you see. Yeah. Nose, mouth has to be on the outside so it can come in. You see, so this is the person's ear in the back. And so this is wow. It's a very, very attractive person in the plant. With the eye on the outside able to see out. So this is
okay, so this is good.
Is that if you extend the elementary canal to its bitter end, does this person fall apart?
And it's exactly right. Yeah, people come in pieces. It turns.
I can't help it. That's the way it is. Okay. Let's see now. Okay, so people. Okay. Well, let's see. I always like to inspire people to learn new professions, and one is the profession of being a thief. Because that's, you know, it's the kind of thing that you might want to learn. And so so here we have an example of a safe. So suppose you have a solid safe that's sitting in four-dimensional space, but it's just in one level. It's just at the zero level of four-dimensional space. So it's like right in this room here, completely solid safe. See? And in the safe there is a book. And it's a math book, so it's very valuable. That's why it's in the safe. It says math book on it, you see? It's in the safe, and the question is, you're a thief, you want to steal the book, but you're a four-dimensional thief, you see? And so you want to figure out, can you steal this book? Can you get it out of the safe without cracking the safe? You see? Now this safe, as you see, just lives in the zero level of four-dimensional space, and the question is, how are you going to steal the book, you see? How are you going to steal the book? So what do you do? What do?
Retreat.
Retreat, yes.
I'll tell you, you're not that bright. Let me just point that out.
Okay, we retreat. We retreat, as always. That's always the correct answer. I've told you what the answer is. It's just a question of what the question is. The answer is retreat. And so, what is the analogous question? The analogous question is, suppose that we had an iron safe like a safe in the two-dimensional plane, and in that we had a very valuable thing like a math book. Now we can, it's in three-dimensional space, you see? So it's all stacked up. Would we have any trouble as three-dimensional thieves in stealing that book without breaking the safe? No. We would just take that book and just move it up, straight up, and it never impinged on the surrounding. And so how do we get this book out of the fourth dimension? We do the same thing. We simply move it up, put it up at a higher level, and then it's outside of the safe. We can move it to the side and move it back down if we wish. And that way, we can do things like if you were a surgeon, you could take out somebody's appendix without any incision. Okay, so talking about surgery and... Okay. Now, okay, let me tell you about. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the cubes, and because the cubes are a familiar object in three-dimensional space, and so we could ask ourselves, could we explore what a cube would look like in four-dimensional space? So the first question is, what is a cube in four-dimensional space, and what is the right answer?
Tesseract.
Thank you. Who's, you know, finally. Okay, let's try it again. So we're trying to understand what we would mean by a cube in the fourth dimension. So what do we do?
Retreat.
Okay, so we retreat, and we ask ourselves, what is a cube in three-dimensional space? Well, I happen to have a cube in three-dimensional space right here. This is a cube. But the trouble with thinking of the cube in this conformation is that we see the whole cube. We're familiar with it. Now, we want to take advantage of our familiarity. But on the other hand, we want to look at this familiar object in an unfamiliar way that allows us to extend our ideas to the fourth dimension. So let's take this familiar cube and look at it in our sliced picture. So let's look at the slices. So here we go. This is a picture of a cube. It starts, it has a base to it, and then it has the side walls. At every horizontal level, if we just looked at our levels here, we're cutting level -1 at the bottom, level 0 in the middle, level 1 at the top, We would have the, if I'm looking just at the boundary of this cube, that's what we would see at the various levels. You'd see a square at every intermediate thing. Now, by the way, for those of you who are bored, let me ask you another question about a cube. And you can be thinking about that while I continue to talk to those others who are actually interested. Okay, so this is completely extraneous. You notice that I was holding the cube up this way, but suppose I held the cube up at a diagonal. So it looked like, you know, I had a point at the top and a point at the bottom. Okay, now it's a little harder to see what the slices would look like. So first of all, think about what the slices would look like at all the different levels. But then the question that you can really ponder is this. Suppose that you hold the cube by the diagonally opposite corners, and then you spin it. Following? Mm-hmm. You spin it fast, and you spin it, and just look at the profile. Mm-hmm. Okay? So let me ask you to envision what that profile would look like. So for those of you who are thinking about other things, that would be a good thing to think about, and I will divulge the answer at the end of the talk. Okay? So this is if you remind me. Okay? So what happens if you hold a cube and spin it, and just envision what it would look like. Okay? Okay, but here's a cube in its regular form. So let me just ask you this. So what would a cube, what would the boundary of a cube in four-dimensional space look like? You see? That was the question. We retreated to look at this level picture of a cube in three-dimensional space. So let's go ahead and look at a cube in four-dimensional space. So here we are. There is a cube in four-dimensional space. We would have it solid at the bottom, and then we have the boundary of a cube. That is, we have six squares at every level going up, and at the top, it's once again solid. So this is the boundary of a four-dimensional cube. Now, what are the faces of a four-dimensional cube, by the way? Three-dimensional cubes, because by analogy, the each face of a three-dimensional cube is a two-dimensional cube, a square. So every face of a four-dimensional cube is a three-dimensional cube. Here are two of them. This one down here is one. This one up here is another face. Where are the other faces of the four-dimensional cube? So let's see. Where are the other faces of the four-dimensional cube? Now, I know what you know what the answer is. Retreat. And so we're going to... Here we go. We'll look at this picture to see what those faces are. We're trying to find out what are the three-dimensional faces of this four-dimensional cube. And so what we did is we just sat next to here this picture of the three-dimensional cube in this level kind of picture. And we want to ask, where are the six faces of that three-dimensional cube? Okay? Well, let's see. So here's number one at the bottom, number two at the top. Same thing here, one at the bottom, two at the top. So now, where are the other faces? The edges
of all the squares.
Swept up. That's right. So, for example, number three would be this, 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 and this. That would be all edge number three. Face number three. Face number three. Not edge. Thank you. Face number three. You see that? Because here's all we're doing is we're looking at this cube, and we took this square and we're pulling it up, so this edge appears at each one of the different levels. And so that creates the face. And likewise, every other side, for example, the top, the top, the top, the top, the top, the top, is a face. That's number four. And number five is over here. Number six is the bottom. The bottom, the bottom, the bottom, the bottom, the bottom, which is really this side coming up. So those are the six faces of a regular three-dimensional cube. What are the faces of a four-dimensional cube?
Every face.
Right. So, for example, we could take this face here, sweep it up. So this side here, this side here, this side here, this side here. Those all together form the third face of this four-dimensional cube. Now that object that we get is a solid three-dimensional cube. Now you may ask yourself, well, it doesn't look like it's going to fit together, right? Because it looks like it's up and down. And when you sweep it, it looks like it doesn't fit so well. You see what I mean? Are you thinking about that? But let's think a little bit more clearly about it, and once again retreat, to see that in fact it forms a perfect cube. Suppose we take the plane, we think about three-dimensional space as a stack of planes, and we take a line segment, and then we sweep that line segment up. Does it matter how that line segment is oriented in the plane? No. If it's like this, it sweeps up and makes a perfect square. If it's at a diagonal and sweeps up, it makes a perfect square. No matter which orientation that line segment is, it makes a perfect square. In the same way, this fourth dimension direction is orthogonal to the entire three-dimensional space, and therefore every single square that we have, when we sweep it up into the fourth dimension, it makes a perfect cube. So there we have the third face. So how many faces are there of a four-dimensional cube?
Eight.
That's right. There are the six faces that are swept faces, and then the bottom and the top. Let's unfold the boundary of a four-dimensional cube. How shall we do that? Now I'm up to four. Okay, retreat. That's exactly right. We want to retreat. So how do we retreat? Well, one thing that we can do is we can start with a three-dimensional cube and unfold it. Now, the way that what I mean by that is that you've all done this before, that what you can do is just unfold the, you can. I didn't say I could. So you unfold.
Oops.
Yeah. Okay, so you can unfold it like this to create in two-dimensional space, notice, you can unfold the boundary of a three-dimensional cube to form this sort of cross-shaped object in three-dimensional space. But that experience that we just did there was not exactly the experience we need to allow us to do the same process in the fourth dimension. Because what we need to do is look at this three-dimensional cube, its boundary, in this configuration, and see how to do the manipulation that we just did, but in using this description of it, so that we can use this description of a four-dimensional cube and unfold its boundary. So let's go ahead and see how we did that. What did we do? We started with one square, like number one here. Number one. And then we say, okay, what squares are attached to square number one? What's the squares abut that square at the base? What's the number?
Three.
Number three. So number three comes up and we can unfold it to the side like that. So this is number three. Now, what would I draw in this picture of number three to demonstrate that I'm understanding how the number three swept face actually is configured? In other words, where does this line, for example, lie when I unfold it down here? What? Vertical, that's right. Vertical. This one is vertical right in the middle. This one is vertical over on the side. And this line right here is this line right here. You agree? Likewise, number four, the face on the top. Well, we could put it shares a common edge right here with the face number one. And therefore, we can put this on the top like this. This is number four. Number five is over here. Drawing these lines to indicate that I know where it's coming from. Number six is at the bottom. I can see what these lines are. These lines at the bottom are all those horizontal lines here. And then I've got this top number two. Where can I put it? Yeah, four different places, because this side is here. I could put it out here. I could put it down here, because this side is this side. This side is this side. This side is this side, and so on. So I could put it at any one of those places. For example, I could put it down here. And if I really knew what I was doing, I would draw it to like that to indicate that it's actually upside down when it's unfolding. Okay, so this is... Now, have we learned enough to unfold the boundary of a four-dimensional cube? Well, yeah, because here we retreated, and we can do exactly the same thing. We start with number one here. And this is a solid cube. And then what do? We put on number three off to the side. We put on the top face on the top, the other one on the side, the other one on the bottom, one on the front, one on the back, and then the very top one we can put at any one of the six protruding arms. This is a picture of the unfolded boundary of a four-dimensional cube, and it's sort of fun. And in fact, it was the object of a work of art by Salvador Dali. This is the work called The Crucifixion, Hypercubicus Crucifixicus. Corpus Hypercubicus, it's called. Salvador Dali, 1954. So this was, you can see this unfolded boundary of the hypercube. See that? Isn't that neat? Okay, so this is Salvador Dali. All right, so this is unfolding the hypercube. Now, okay, so let me, but one of the themes of how we approach constructing ideas is to look at the familiar world in unfamiliar ways and see how to extend those ideas to other domains. So we've looked at the four-dimensional space as stacks of three-dimensional spaces, but there are other ways that we can create the lower dimensional spaces from yet lower ones. So for example, the plane. We talk about the plane as being a stack of one-dimensional planes, of lines. But we could think of it as creating it by sweeping in a circle a ray. We can start with just a ray coming out from the origin and then just rotating that ray around to create the plane. So we take a half one-dimensional space and then just rotate it around. Now let's see if we can, by analogy, think about how we can extend that idea to higher dimensions. So let's go ahead and do the same thing here and see if we can construct the third dimension by the same kind of process. So here we could take a half two-dimensional space, which would have a boundary, which is a line, and we could take that half two-dimensional space and then just rotate it around to create this room, or in fact, all of three-dimensional space. So that's a nice idea, that we take half of the previous dimension, rotate it around its boundary, which is actually yet one more dimension lower, in order to get another vision of a higher dimensional space. So in this case, when we sweep this around, we get something that looks like a book, right? It looks like a book, because we have the pages of a book, except a book that you've broken. You took the things, and so the pages are sticking out, all radiating from a line. That's the vision we have of this three-dimensional space, or familiar three-dimensional space. Okay. So now we ask ourselves, what is four-dimensional space? How can we look at four-dimensional space in an analogous way? So maybe I should just ask you first, how would you do that? How would you create four-dimensional space? Okay, well, first, retreat. Exactly. I guess it needs not be said. Retreat. Okay, so let's remember how we created the plane, two-dimensional space. We took half one-dimensional space and swept it around its boundary. And that created the plane. To create three-dimensional space, we took half of two-dimensional space and we swept it around its boundary, which was a line. So how do we create four-dimensional space? Have three-dimensional space. What's its boundary? Plane. And what do? Sweep it around. Okay. There we go. So there, by analogy, we have created four-dimensional space. We take half of three-dimensional space, we take its boundary, which is a plane, and then we rotate that three-dimensional space around the plane. Now, it's a little bit hard, you know, to envision what that means, to rotate around a plane, because a plane doesn't look in our world like something you want to rotate around, right? But the analogy holds. We're doing things by metaphor, by analogy. So what it means is that as we sweep, the plane is fixed. just like it was in all the lower dimensions. The plane itself is fixed. But what is just like when we rotated this around, they all shared this common boundary. But at every angle, and there was one angle for every angle of a circle, at every angle it just shares that boundary and nothing else. So in other words, when we take this room and we have this flat plane here, and we're rotating the room, when we rotate even a small angle, it's completely disjoint, except for this plane. Okay, so this is another description of four-dimensional space by rotating around a plane. Well, that's pretty cool right away. Now, let's see if we can just do some exploration for how we can envision four-dimensional space in that sort of odd way. So let's look at some objects in this space, and as usual, we'll retreat way back down to the lower dimensions and just get accustomed to it, and then we'll see what we can get. So suppose that we take this representation of the plane by just taking half of a line and rotating it around, and suppose I just took a single point in that ray, and I said, what would that create when I rotate that ray around the boundary? Circle. It would be a perfect circle, and in fact, at this dimension, we can actually draw it. It would just be a circle. So that's what it is. That's good. Now, suppose that we do the same thing here. Now we'll go up. We're all, as usual, we're just going to march our way up dimension and get used to it. And then, as we develop our strength, we'll be able to deal with the fourth dimension in the same way by analogy. So here we are going to create three-dimensional space, our familiar world, by simply rotating around the taking this half plane and rotating it around. And so let me just ask you some objects and ask what would happen if we rotated these objects around. So first, let's suppose that I just took a single point. I'll put way up here just so it's out of the way. Suppose that I rotate that point around. What would I get?
A circle.
What would I get if I took a circle and rotated it around?
A torus.
Right. You get a donut, right? You get a torus shape. So that's good. Now, what would happen, one thing about this is that as I rotate it around, I could move it. There's no real reason I have to keep that circle, for example, fixed as I rotate it around the plane. I could, for example, move it up and down. So let's just imagine in our mind's eye that we do that, that as the circle is going around, I'll just make it go down for a while and then back up, and then join up so that it does join up back where it started. What would I get if I did that? What would it look like?
Torus.
It would still be a torus. That's right. And what would it look like? I mean, physically. Yeah, do you want to move your hands so I can see if you're holding it? You know, what would it do? Yeah, it would go down and then back up again. Yeah, it would just be sort of an undulating torus. Right. So that's a torus. So this is a torus. Okay, so let's look at another thing. Now let's look at the fourth dimension. So here we go. If we take a circle in the fourth dimension, and we just rotate that circle around, keep that circle fixed, but we just rotate it around and it comes back to itself, what do we get?
A torus.
We get a torus, that's exactly right. Now let's do something as we're rotating around. So as it rotates around, remember it's sitting in three-dimensional space. At every angle, we have an entire room to work with. And so this circle, as it's going around, we can move that circle, and we could, for example, we can move it down and up, as we did before. But we have more space, so we could actually move it like this. We could, as we move it around, in the room where it sits at every angle, we could rotate it around like this, 180 degrees. You follow me? So as it's going around, I'm going to turn it so that the inside becomes the outside. You see? So if I'm drawing the circle like this, as I rotate it around, I'm going to precess like it's rotating, and so that when it comes back, instead of being like this, it's like this. So the inside of the circle is attached to the outside. Okay? So what would that one be? So this is a little turn. Right. This is a Klein bottle. This is a Klein bottle. So this is an embedding of a Klein bottle. Now, so I'll tell you. First of all, let me explain what a Klein bottle is for those of you who don't know. If you take a tube in three-dimensional space, a tube like an inner tube, and you glue it together, you get a torus. But if you were able to, instead of bringing the ends together like this, if you brought it through the sidewall, you cut a hole in the side of that tube and you brought it through and then joined it, then you would get an object, except for the hole, that's called the Klein bottle. It's a Klein bottle. It's actually, it's two Möbius bands sewed together along the edge of the Möbius band. Okay, we'll talk about that later if you want to, but this is an example of something that you cannot embed in three-dimensional space, but you can actually embed it in four-dimensional space. In other words, you can't actually completely construct a Klein bottle in three-dimensional space without the hole, but you can by using this method of sweeping. Okay, now let me ask you about some other things here. Here is an example. Now let's take advantage of the fact that we have the sidewall that's fixed, this plane that's fixed, and suppose that we have two points here that it is attached to. So this is a semicircle, and at the ends of the semicircle are on this fixed plane, and then we're sweeping this half free space around that fixed plane. Now, what object will we get? Retreat. Yeah, I think this is an excellent one to retreat on. So let's go back and just to make sure we see what it is. All right. So let's retreat because this is one we can actually draw in three-dimensional space. Suppose that we just do this. All right, so here we have a semicircle in a half plane, and we've got this semicircle, and we sweep it around. Mm-hmm. What do we get?
Sphere.
Yeah, this one we can see, it's just a sphere. It's a globe, right? It's like the boundary of the Earth. It's a globe. So this is what we get when we sweep it around. Now, suppose we do the same thing and we sweep this around here. That's right. It's exactly the same thing. Intrinsically, it's exactly the same thing as before. It's a surface. It's just locally like a surface, a flat two-dimensional surface. Not flat, but it's a two-dimensional surface. Okay. So this is a picture of a sphere. Now what I'd like to do for a minute is to let's do something else before I do this. Let me show you something that we can do that's a little more fun. In three-dimensional space, if you have a circle, one thing you can do with a circle is you can put a knot in the circle. Right? You can have a knotted simple closed curve. Well, in four-dimensional space, what we can do is we can take advantage of this sweeping kind of notion, and what we can do is this. Suppose we take a knotted arc. So it hits the surface, the boundary, in two points, and we have this knot in here. So this is a trefoil. It's not. I should have drawn it so you could see that this goes over and then this goes under. So this is, anyway. Okay, so this is a trefoil knot. And we have it, it's just attached to two points, and we have this knot here, and then we just rotate it around. You see, there's no problem because at every angle, we've got this entire three-dimensional room. And so when we do that, we get a knotted two-sphere. So this is an analogy to a knotted simple closed curve in three space. So this is a knotted two-sphere. Now what I'd like to talk about is linking for a minute. You know, in three-dimensional space, the kinds of things that link each other are simple closed curves. If you take a simple closed curve and you take another simple closed curve, they link each other. Now, we can ask ourselves the question, what pairs of sphere-like objects link each other in the fourth dimension? Now, what would you recommend we do? Retreat. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at this question of what kinds of things link one another, but we'll look at it down in the third, in lower dimension. So let's start with linking in one dimension. So what things link in the line? And by things, I'm talking about spheres. Now, what is a low-dimensional sphere? That is, a sphere is a set of points that are equidistant from a given point in Euclidean space. So on a line, a sphere is a pair of points. A pair of points. So a pair of points links another pair of points in the following way. That if you have a pair of points here and another pair of points here, you cannot move them and get one of those pair of points past the other pair of points. They're in a lock. So that's linking in one-dimensional space.
You see, that's a little weird.
Now, what's linking in two-dimensional space? What pairs of spheres link one another in two-dimensional space? Well, a circle and a pair of points link each other. Because there's no way you can move that pair of points or move that circle to get them unentwined from each other. In other words, you can't get the two points next to each other because they're separated by the circle. So that's linking in two-dimensional space.
But two pairs of points would not link.
Two pairs of points would not link. Right, because if you had two pairs of points in the plane, you'd have plenty of room to slide them over and around. Right. Okay, now let's see what things link in three-dimensional space. Well, these are the familiar, like rings, would link in three-dimensional space. So, for example, if you had two rings like this, they link in three-dimensional space. You can't pull them apart. Now, by the way, there's another pair of spheres that link in three-dimensional space. What are those?
Zero.
Right. A true sphere, and then a pair of points, one inside and one outside. You can't get them apart from each other. So by analogy, we've actually got two pairs of spheres that link each other in three-dimensional space. But, well, we can look at sort of the dimensionality of the linking. It's one-dimensional objects, two one-dimensional objects link in three space, and also a two-dimensional object, two-sphere, and a pair of points, which is a zero-sphere, link. In other words, we went up in dimension, we took one of these circles and made it a sphere, went from one-dimensional space, the circle, to a sphere, two-dimensional, and we went down in the other dimension, from a circle down to two points, zero dimension. So the sum of those two add up to two, one less than the ambient dimension, three. So now the question becomes, what pairs of spheres will link in the fourth dimension? So why don't we just make a guess? What pairs of spheres link in the fourth dimension? So let's see if you can think of that.
Two sphere and a line.
Pardon?
Two sphere and a line.
Not a line.
One sphere.
That's right. A true sphere and a one sphere. You see, a true sphere and a one sphere. So can we draw in the fourth dimension a two sphere and a one sphere that link each other? So let's go ahead and see if we can do that. Well, we've been thinking about how we can construct a two sphere in three-dimensional space by sweeping a circle, an arc that joins the two points along this plane, sweeping it around the plane. That gave us a two-sphere. Can we imagine a one-sphere, that is a simple closed curve, circle, that links that two-dimensional sphere? Where would I draw it?
A point inside.
Now,
a point that moves around in different sections?
It could be. It could be. Could be, but it's not. Yeah, you could do it that way, but you don't have to. There's a simpler place to put a simple closed curve. Can you see where you might put it? Okay, well are you thinking? You could do it right there if you wanted, or you could just do it right here. Just in one of those places, just the one angle, at the zero angle, put a circle there. And then you can't get it off in that place, so you might say, well, could I move it to a different angle? Well, if you move it to a different angle, it's still linked against that arc. And so you're never going to be able to take that simple closed curve and move it off the arc. So that's an example of a linking sphere. Now, by the way, let me just demonstrate that we can think about that linking sphere in one more way, which is by retreating and looking at how we construct a linking pair of simple closed curves in this picture of three-dimensional space. Well, we could have one circle at the zero level, and then we could have a pair of points. You see, they link each other at the zero level, and then you could make these pair of points get shorter together and come together at the top and the bottom to create this linking pair of curves. And now, if we want to create the fourth dimension, now we have the fourth dimension, and instead of this object, you see, if we're in the fourth dimension, it's not a sphere and a pair of points that link. A circle and a pair of points could come apart. But if we put a two-sphere right here, right at this zero level of four-dimensional space, and we put this point inside and this point outside, then that would be another picture of a sphere linked by a simple closed curve. See, so retreating is what allowed us to do it. Now, let me just do one last linking thing, which is a new phenomenon that occurs in four-dimensional space that can't occur in three-dimensional space. Namely, suppose that we take this picture here of a knotted sphere. This is a knotted sphere. Look what we can do. We can take another sphere like this. You see that sphere? It sort of links it, and we sweep both of those around. Then we get a pair of two-dimensional spheres that link each other. And this cannot happen in three-dimensional space. You can't have examples of smooth, for example, two-dimensional spheres or a two-sphere and a one-sphere. There's no way to make them link each other if it's a smooth one, tame one. You can't do that. Whereas in the fourth dimension, we have this new phenomenon where you can actually have two pairs of two-dimensional spheres that link one another. So that's a new phenomenon. There are all sorts of things you can do in four space when you do this spinning. For example, as you move around here, you could take this knotted curve and rotate it.
What if you have two knotted curves?
Yeah, you can have two knotted curves. And you have them intertwined with each other, and you can rotate all of them. And if you just have this one, and you rotate it around, and you spin it around, for example, you make two rotations before it comes back to the beginning. You follow me? So that as you're going, at each different angle, you have a whole three-dimensional space, and you can take this knot and just rotate it as you go. And if you rotate it by 720 degrees by the time you get back to where you started, then you've got a twisted spun knot, which has an interesting property in that it has
torsion in this fundamental group. It has elements of the fundamental group, which when you go around the curve twice, you can shrink them off of the curve, whereas you couldn't do it when you just go around once. So that's also another new phenomenon in the fourth dimension. Okay, but what I wanted to end with is to say that I think that what we've seen here is a journey into the fourth dimension. But I think besides that, we've seen a strategy by which new ideas are conceived. And I think that mathematics has a great deal to offer society in general, not only in the results of the actual mathematics themselves, but in the strategies by which we investigate and create new ideas. We really are the winners of thinking outside the box and of thinking of ideas that transcend when we come up with a brick wall and we feel that there's no way to go, like the end of the third dimension, that we can find a chink in that armor and we can open it up until the sun shines in. And then we can walk into that vista and see yet further vistas beyond. So I think mathematics has something in the inspirational way to teach society as well. So thank you very much.